matter what we did, it seemed like it was a story.
Scotty was being selfish.
When the trust is broken, it's sort of shocking.
I never hated Scotty.
6 championships in 8 years.
We were the greatest team ever.
What time is it?
I'm going to ridicule you until you get on the same level with me.
No man get a free run of me.
It was his team.
My mentality was to go out and win at any cost.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by DoorDash. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. Look under Podcasts and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what's going on?
Everything is great. Victorino?
Yes.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing fine.
You doing okay?
As you can tell, I used my Philips Norelco.
It looks great.
Thank you. I shaved the side, and Kate said, if you need any help, I can, do the back part. And I said, great. And she goes, anytime. I said, great. So I was downstairs outside. Yes, Sunny, I was outside and let my hair just scatter to the four winds. And then
now somebody can frame you for murder by using DNA trace evidence where they could gather
right.
up.
That's right. Those little pieces, they're like pine needles.
Isn't that what happened in Gattaca?
Yes, no.
Well,
he left the hair on the
bed. One of the characters gathered some DNA evidence so he could pretend to be somebody else.
Oh, okay.
It was, but also he had to make sure there was no hair left on the bed. He was with, was it Uma Thurman?
I don't know. Hate that movie. I think that movie sucks.
I liked it a lot. I thought it was really interesting.
No,
anyway.
Lots of people really like that movie.
Yeah.
It looks like a movie that cost $12 to make because that's what it cost to make. And I've always hated it. I've always thought it looked cheap and bad.
You didn't like Gore Vidal? it was great at that. Then she came down, but she's like, I got a Zoom conference in like 5 minutes, so I'll be really quick. And then she just went like this really fast.
Boom, that was the end of that.
But I love this Philips Norelco 7000 series, I think it's called. And it has all different kinds of clips. There's 5mm, 6, 7, 3. And then there was one that said body.
Oh.
Yeah. So I'm basically smooth like a dolphin now. I'm just... just like a dolphin. I'm just gonna put it out.
Andre Agassi style.
Yeah. Oh,
do you remember when he went through the phase when he went totally hairless?
Oh,
below the eyebrows.
Well, of course,
below the eyebrows.
Below the eyebrows.
Right? No, it was during his Barbra Streisand period.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea that that was a hairpiece. That's the other thing that was so wild about that story about Andre Agassi.
What's funny is
worried
because
about
he's
it coming
our,
off
because he's Armenian. The guy's insanely hairy everywhere else,
except
just not the head.
That's right.
Not the head.
Okay, so that's it.
It's a real monkey's paw sort of thing.
It is. But so we're gonna. This is all sort of impromptu because you're throwing it to me. But I might as well just do my bit, and then I'll go over to you guys. So I'm doing fine now that you asked JVL. Except I do feel bad. Brian Dennehy died.
Yeah, you killed him.
So
another
when I heard
victim.
The news,
add another victim to the pile.
JVL, you mentioned, you were like, oh no, it was your wife who said, oh, if he died, then I must have mentioned it, the whole thing. And I said, oh, that's crazy. I wonder what I mentioned him. What do we do? Discuss the movie FX2 or whatever, Cocoon. And so, the Bobby Knight movie. So I started thinking about it. I said, did I mention him maybe in that Rambo episode we did on Rambo Last Blood? And so I went back and I found it. And I'm going to play it to you right now, the bit. Okay,
oh,
here
boy.
It is. Are you ready? Here it is.
I think First Blood is very good. We discussed this a little bit last week. I think First Blood is very good, and everything else after that is like
Brian
a pretty
Dennehy.
Steep decline.
Literally, you just said his name.
Brian Dennehy.
Not even the rest.
I now condemn you to death.
It was really quite disturbing. The way it sounded, Brian Dennehy, you now have 6 months.
It was really weird. If we had real fans, if the Subbeacon had real fans... We get some fan art of like Vic as the emissary from Persia in 300. You remember in 300 when the Persian emissary rolls up and he's got the skulls on the on the chain shows to Leonidas? We would just have the heads of celebrities Vic Mattis wielded chain.
Gary Fisher, Neil Peart.
Here's the question.
Yes. I should have said David Caruso, so I'm sorry, everybody. Okay,
Vic, are you killing these
people
yourselves?
Well, you
set them
now. What? What did you say?
Well, you set them now.
Yeah. Am I what?
Victorino, are you killing these people yourselves, or are you like the Silver Surfer, merely a herald for death?
That's right. That's it. I'm more
you
Silver
yourself.
Surfer. No, no, no. I'm not like
you've just been sent by Galactus in front of him. You don't have you don't want Brian Dennehy dead.
No,
you just, it's just your mission in life.
Well, Vic is a medium.
Brian Dennehy.
Is this what you're suggesting? He's a medium. The death flows through him.
It flows through me. One of our listeners actually put together some really insane art where I was like the Grim Reaper with my head on it. I don't know if you saw that. It was great and terrifying at the same time. So thank you. But that's all that is going on with me. Otherwise, everything is fine. I'm working out and running every other day. I did.
Do me a favor, rip that shirt off. I want to see what you got going on.
What is this, a Calvin Klein commercial? Just 3.5 miles today. I did 3.5 miles.
You've got a really nice body. Do you work out?
Okay, JVL. Enough about me.
Listen. I don't want you to do anything you're not comfortable with. Just the top button, just to see how it feels.
I need the wood paneling. Remember that?
You remember those? Remember that?
And the guy, it was like a director clearly sitting on a couch.
Do you like doing woodwork?
Right. He sounded like a total pervert.
And the models, I think, were probably like
16, 17. It was insane.
And they're all boys. They're all like 17-year-old boys.
And that.
Do you ever work with hardwoods?
This is before Sonny's time, isn't it?
I have literally no idea what you guys are talking
about. Can you believe
they
ran that commercial?
This was
think about it now. It's like, go ahead, take your shirt off.
A series of Calvin Klein television ads, the theme of which was basically perverted fashion photographer getting young boys to strip down to their underwear. But that was the idea. I mean, this was a very transgressive.
And I think they managed to get away with They aired it like two or three times, and then they had to pull the plug at the time. It was like, this is too much.
Was Mark Wahlberg in those ads?
No.
This is when Vic and I were like 12 or something.
No, I we were older, but were we? Oh yeah, but
do these
but
things
the,
exist
but the models
on YouTube?
Were kids.
So it was like 1974.
No,
this has got to. I think it was late
80s. Really nice.
So I will tell you what's up with me, Victorino.
Yes,
I have discovered a rare delicacy. Playing Guitar Hero with your kid. Because Flash and I, so we are borrowing my, we don't do a lot of video games in our household, and we are borrowing my brother-in-law's Wii system. Because only decade-old video game systems in my house. We would never obviously do something update.
Right.
And the only one of the games I think we've bothered playing is Guitar Hero. And we've been doing Legends of Rock, which is filled with great, I mean, both 70s rock, like Iron Maiden and Alice
Cooper. So this
Cooper
is very
and
much
Kiss.
How
also 90s stuff like Smashing Pumpkins and Pearl Jam.
I had this. Game. And I have
when,
this game
when,
somewhere
when he
in my
was
house.
A kid.
Yeah.
Flash and I jumping around in the basement, rocking out to this
great.
Stuff, like with total abandon, like doing the leg kicks and the machine gun style. Oh, it's awesome.
Because I'm older than all of you, but you know, spiritually, I'm older by decades than all of you. Is it basically like Guitar Hero is like Simon Says? You just have to memorize what they're doing. You just have to follow it quickly. You're watching the pattern in order to play the right chords.
Yeah, kind of. You're not like strumming chords. You're pressing
buttons.
But so it's like you press them in the right order.
And
then there's like
a
whammy bar.
But
and
you
like
got
a
wah-wah
chord.
Pedal on it.
Yeah.
And
you can
jazz it up. And you can just go hog wild.
Good to know.
A little bit of Living Color. You know what's funny though? So we're playing Cult of Personality, the Living Color.
People love that. As well as the video, if you remember the video.
So we're sitting and we're playing this, and he's like,
"God, 91,
Dad, the song is so rock and roll." I said, "You know what this song was?" I said, "This is the first cassette tape that I bought for myself."
Oh wow!
My buddy Chris Worshoven and I were in Philadelphia. We went to the Tower Records on South Street, and I bought myself my very first rock and roll cassette tape.
Tower Records was a big deal.
And Flash looked at me, he's like, "You're what?" Yeah. Never mind. It's a thing we used before there were iPods.
Yeah.
He's like, "I what?" I was like, "Phones, before we had phones. It's a thing we don't
Just play your guitar.
That's right.
So but, it is a little bit hurtful that he has relegated me to being the bassist.
It's
he
one
wants
of the most,
to play lead guitar on everything.
It is the most important part of any band because it lays the foundational structure, and it's so unsung. And that's what we tell the bassist.
That's what we tell the bassist.
Yeah, that's what you have to tell the bassist.
Yeah, but have you know?
That's
Flash
why,
is
that's
like,
why
Flash
the bassist is,
like,
is always like a hot chick in the background. It's like, yeah, you just do it.
Oh, Flash goes. This Rage Against the Machine stuff is awesome. I was like, yeah, I know. And they're really ahead of their time because they're all commies. And he was like, what? I was like, yeah. This is the proto Sanders movement.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
This is all the
Rage Against the Machine
guys.
I'd say the bass is probably the easiest. Oh, okay. Sonny's gone. Hey, it was great seeing you. Take care, Sonny. We'll show you pictures.
I needed the move so I could get a coaster to put my drink on so you don't hear a thunk every time I put it down on the.
What are you drinking, Sonny?
It's an old fashioned.
Oh,
very nice. Even with the orange peel, so you don't do the maraschino.
I do an orange peel and a lemon peel, but I don't have any cherries. I don't actually like cherries in my old fashioned. Sometimes I'll do the cherry and the Manhattan.
And I see that you have what you call a rustic slice because it's a wide slice. It's not a twist.
It's not a twist. Definitely not a twist.
You need a nice rustic slice for a nice drink like that.
I'm sorry. Can we just talk about music technology for like 1 minute? Because I never actually bought a cassette tape.
So you never made a mixtape for the girl you liked your sophomore year?
No, I definitely never did that. I never bought a cassette tape, but I had a bunch of blank cassettes, and I would record songs off of the radio.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So sure. I did that. Wow. I did that a ton. But I
old school.
But I never had the actual. I never bought the cassette tapes because my dad was a total like tech snob, and he was like, "Don't buy cassettes, just buy CDs." And I was like, "Dad, I don't have a CD player." "It's fine. You'll have one in a couple of years." I was like,
"So
I was like, all right."
He had you buying discs before you had a CD player in the house.
No, I just bought nothing. Okay. And I recorded songs off of the radio.
I had Motley Crue's Theater of Pain on cassette, and also the Beastie Boys, License to Ill.
Oh, the best.
But my two favorite were...
There's a Beastie Boys track on this Legends of Rock game. It's awesome.
Oh, really?
With Sabotage.
Yeah. Sure. And I also had Belinda Carlisle. Her solo career.
Post when she took to the pages of Playboy.
Oh,
do you remember this?
Yeah.
It was 10 years too late.
That's right.
This was the one with
Heaven is a Place on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But the even better Circle in the Sand. Really go back to that. That's an underrated. And she had a couple songs that turned out to be covers. I'm like, what? I thought she wrote all her stuff. I was really disappointed.
Was she Australian?
No,
Kylie Minogue American. I'm thinking of.
Oh,
sorry.
She's great, too. Okay.
Santino, how are you?
Sonny.
I'm fine.
How's life in Texas? Fine.
You're just loving it? It's great. Did you go to the big protest in Austin?
Life in Texas. No. Was there a protest in Austin?
Protest in Austin. I've been fascinated with this all day long. This is going to stray a little bit close to politics, but I think we can stay away from the political angle of it. So there's a protest in Austin by a bunch of patriots who really are just sick and tired of big government trying to keep people in their homes and whatnot. And they're ready to, they want to fire Fauci. And anyway, so Alex Jones, it's all organized by InfoWars, and Alex Jones shows up to this thing. And I believe it is Jones who announces through a bullhorn at this protest that there has now been confirmation that the virus is a biological weapon that had been unleashed on America by the Chinese. And as he says this, the protesters let up a cheer.
Oh, well, they were cheering the confirmation that happened. That's what they mean.
Because that makes it better.
Yeah,
yes,
absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
100%. Really... If this is a biological weapon that the Chinese unleashed upon us, that gives us an enemy that we can attack. Right now, we're all just attacking ourselves. We're stuck at home. We need to be unified against the Chinese threat. Frankly,
that's
Alex Jones is making a lot of sense here.
But
wouldn't it mean that we have
markets.
To then like go starting a war with the Chinese? I mean, because if they in fact have attacked us biologically, don't we, on top of all of this stuff, also have to go to war with a country that has a billion people?
That's fine.
Do we have the time and money to do that
JBL,
right now?
Haven't you seen Red Dawn? Don't you remember the great line in Red Dawn? I thought there were a billion screaming Chinamen. There were.
Says the great Powers Booth.
Says the great Powers Booth.
F-15 fighter pilot Powers Booth.
Curly Bill.
Yeah. So you didn't go to the Alex Jones protest.
No, sadly, I missed that. No, I'm excited to open things back up again. I think that Georgia's on the right track here with their theaters and their barbers and their salons opening back up. You know, we're going to be fine. It's the experiments, the democracy experiments, state by state. We'll get
right
through
before
this.
Right before the shutdown in Virginia, I went to the barber, and Habib was wearing the mask and gloves, and they spray the Lysol the chair. I mean, it was fine.
Yeah,
it was fine.
You're not gonna get it. He's wearing a mask. You'll be fine.
I'm looking around. I feel like Richard Dreyfuss at the end of Close Encounters when they say, "Oh, there's nerve gas. Everybody wear a gas mask." And I'm looking around at all the people wearing the mask, and I feel like, yelling out, "It's fine. You're fine. I could guarantee you, we're all fine." That's how I felt about it. I just wanted. That got kind of political there. Sorry, I rarely get into that. But I looked at that, and I see them wearing the masks inside their car.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure they go to sleep wearing the mask because it can,
I'm done.
You know.
I'm done with this.
Like invasion of the body snatchers. The
open it back up.
Coming in through the vents. All right.
God, natural selection is the best, isn't it?
I know. JVL's convinced. 2 million, at least.
I mean, nobody in Dallas has it, is the funny thing. Like, just as a percentage of the population, like, virtually nobody has it, so... We're not like New York. We're not like those dirty New Yorkers jammed into their cattle cars going to
subways.
Work.
Subways. It's the subways.
Jammed into their disgusting disease factories as they shuttle from their home that's 6 feet wide by 12 feet long to their office that's a cubicle and a closet as they cough on each other in the subway to get there.
I love how we didn't expect to get into this, and then now we're getting right into it. Okay,
there's nothing else. This is our life now.
But you've had it. When they decide that they're going to reopen the theater, Sonny, are you going to go to the theater?
100%, absolutely. I'm not going to be cowed by this disease into giving up the things that I love, like
JVL,
movies.
Are you still holding the line that there won't be theaters to come back to?
For all intents and purposes, most Americans have seen their final movie in a theater. Some chains may live to reopen and will then be pushed into bankruptcy shortly after when it turns out that nobody will go. This isn't going to... You know, I actually feel very lucky because the final movie I saw in the theaters...
Was The Hunt?
Inception.
Inception.
Yes.
That's right.
Because I took myself out as a special treat to the Inception anniversary Dolby Atmos screening. And that's a heck of a way to go out. But this whole thing is, people don't, anyway, I'm in the middle of writing a long piece about this.
When Tenet comes out and is playing on IMAX and you go to the website, because you're curious and you go to the Fandango and you look at the thing and Tenet is playing on IMAX in the middle of July at like a 2 p.m. showing. There were three other people in the theater. Are you going to go see it?
I would love to be able to go see it, but that theater won't exist.
Okay.
That theater's not going to be open for business. No. The Udvar-Hazy might be, but then the Udvar-Hazy may itself not be open because things like museums will be the last things to get open along with like major sports. I'm telling you, you guys are way. Have you read the Nick Eberstadt piece on this that just came out over the weekend?
No, I saw it in your newsletter. I've not read it yet.
Nick is even further out on the ledge than I am. It's gonna be great. It's gonna be
great. Who did I read? George Gilder in the Journal. He's on the other side.
I read
get
Alex
over
Jones.
In America. Get over it. I read
Alex Jones, and he said that this is a Chinese weapon, and to defeat the weapon, we have to bomb the Chinese. So
I wonder if it's
a bioweapon, that makes it more serious, right? Not less serious. No.
Well, it depends on what you mean by serious, because if it's a bioweapon.
Means they've engineered it to be really bad.
Right. Well, which is about what we've seen, right? This is like, in theory, people who catch it can catch it again, right? Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if it is a bioweapon, that just means we have to go to war with China now before everyone gets too sick to fight.
That could be one of the interpretations. That's true.
Now, normally we get to some sort of box office discussion, but of course there is no. Is there ever going to be a box office? Are we going to have that happen again? Box office thoughts? No.
No, we got to come up with a new segment in this place.
Oh, my gosh.
In its
VOD
place,
chart.
I'm out of VOD. Right, because I'm really, I've had a loss there. Okay. All right.
We could do streaming minutes.
Yes,
whatever,
streaming.
You know,
do you have any streaming thoughts?
I've been watching lots of things on streaming. I have a giant stack of Blu-rays in my garage that my wife like keeps getting angrier and angrier about. She's sitting right over there right now. She's shaking her head. And it's
Beth,
getting
come
it's
say
getting,
hi.
It's getting
come say
bigger.
Hi, Bev.
It's getting she can't hear you. You're talking
well, you could tell her.
The guy say hi. The stack is getting bigger and bigger, but I don't have time to watch anything because I don't have time anymore. Who has time?
Who has time
to like sit down and watch a 2-hour
movie? Totally true. I'm busier than ever in a weird way. You don't think it, but of course it's the full day.
What do you mean weird way, Victorino?
You're
a journalist.
Schedule.
You work in news.
Yes.
This is in fact the largest news event of our lifetimes.
That's right. That's
so
right.
So of course
right.
we're busier
than
ever.
And working home, it's just weird. When I go to, if you go to Amazon or Netflix, I'm convinced there's a conspiracy that the computers are listening to me. So every time I say, oh, yeah, I think I just saw that movie on Netflix. I'd like to see that. And suddenly it's no longer there. That keeps on happening to me a lot.
Oh, I thought you were going to go the other way with this, where you're talking about it with somebody, and then when you open up Amazon, it's right there.
It shows up. Oh, well, it's there, but you got to pay for it. You know what I mean? It's all there. You got to pay. But they usually have the free selections, and then they just rotate them in and out. I'm like, it was just there.
JVL, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
How excited were you to see that Netflix is now more valuable than Disney?
Super duper excited.
Did you go and liquidate all of your other stock to buy nothing but Netflix stock?
I did that months ago because I think Netflix is really the place to put all your money. It's better than gold bars buried in your backyard.
Better than oil.
Although it's not entirely crazy right now because Disney is in a lot of trouble. Because, you know,
would you say that all along, the people who told you to invest in Netflix and to overlook the earnings versus, you know, whatever, the ridiculous numbers you were throwing around?
No,
were right.
I still don't think
were
Netflix
they right?
is a... No, because Netflix is still going to be stepped on by Amazon.
It's the most valuable company, though.
Well, it's the best company. If they could only merge with Tesla... If they could merge with Tesla so they could stream Netflix in people's electric cars.
And the ventilators that Elon Musk
with their ventilators. That would be the best of all of the things.
Did you gentlemen want to discuss, this is nothing that I really care for, but I'm throwing it out there because I saw you exchange it on text about the Batman.
The Batman versus
God.
True Detective Season 4, Batman.
So what's happening
Nick
here?
Nick Piazzoli. What's his Nick?
Pizzolatto.
Pizzolatto. Oofa.
Oofa. Oh, Maron.
Gabagool. All right, Sonny, can you set the table for this? Because I'm too much drinking.
Tell us what you're drinking, JVL.
I'm drinking my mother-in-law's favorite drink. Kirkland brand knockoff Bailey's over club soda. And this is number 3.
Ooh. Over the club soda.
Number 3.
So number 3.
It's like fizzy. That's like it's like an alcoholic egg cream. How much, what is the percent of alcohol in that? 20%.
Hold on. I'll look at it. 15. I'll effort this.
Okay. So the 13, story.
13.9.
Wow. You must be just hammered right now.
So the story, I texted this to Vic and JVL. It's Nick Pizzolatto, who is the guy who made the True Detective shows. He's done all 3 seasons of True Detective. He's written some novels, whatever. Somebody asked him on Instagram, is there any like comic book that you would want to do, or like would you want to do Batman, blah blah blah, and he just goes off. He says, Batman is the only character in the world I didn't create that I want a shot at, and I think he's the only piece of geek culture I have any affinity for. Batman's no kill policy is valid and should always remain, but the policy does not exist because, quote, killing makes me as bad as them, quote, or some kindergarten bullshit that never held any water at all. Batman's no-kill policy exists because Batman's real and eternal enemy is death. Death is his real enemy. I think the bat is a totem and tool. This is a man who's mastered every form of meditation and martial combat on Earth, a man versed in world religion and martial tradition. I hate this version of Batman. It's everywhere, especially in the movies. Batman is not some wounded boy, some man-child who can't get over his parents' death. He's not an arrested child. He's not the Phantom of the Opera. He's not broken in any way. He's the opposite. Batman is not the story of a traumatized rich boy who works out his catharsis on the mentally ill. Batman is the story of how one human saint turned a life-defining tragedy into the pinnacle of human achievement and the single greatest humanitarian crusade the world has ever known. And his money doesn't matter, it's merely a convenience. It actually adds to his heroism. His wealth means he could have done literally anything else than what he devotes his life to. Batman's superpower is not money. Batman's superpower is that he thinks of everything, and he has the strongest will of the species. If he had time to strategize, Batman could credibly defeat God.
A will to power?
I, of course, text this to Vic and JVL. I was like, this hits many of our issues. Batman, God, fascism, all at once. And I'm a big proponent of this. I think it's basically right. And the only real question is, would Batman have time to prepare for his showdown with God? Or would God, like, cheat and lightning bolt him out of the blue? It's really the Batman versus Superman question.
Yeah. Almost everything that Nick Pizzaface says in this is wrong. Like, just wrong.
Elaborate, right? JVO.
Batman's enemy is not death. His enemy is injustice. Like, that's his obsession is with justice. And the reason he does
death is
not
the ultimate injustice.
Kill. No. There are plenty of people who deserve death. The best explanation for why the no kill exists comes from Frank Miller, and it is because Batman understands that he is a monster. He's not a saint. He's a monster. He's like vaguely sociopathic, and that if he allows himself to kill once, all he will do is kill, and that he will not be able to make the rational distinctions between the Joker, who should be killed, and like some guy who's just snatched a purse.
Yes,
he does not have that ability to discern things, and so he has to draw a line in the sand and say, I can't do anything over that line because I do not have the ability to understand what is proportional.
The counter to that, of course, is that the purse snatcher deserves to be killed just as much as the Joker, because every purse snatcher is only like three steps from becoming a Joe Chill who kills Batman's parents.
True, and also because the lady with the purse worked very hard to own that purse, and the person
100%.
Who you know who else Batman should kill? Anybody who ever downloaded a pirated song from the internet.
Yes,
because you're basically four steps away from Jing Joe Chill if you ever used Napster.
I agree with this, actually. This is this, but unironically. If we were on Twitter right now, I would be saying this, but unironically.
Very strongly about that.
It's all very stupid. But I'd be willing to overlook all of this if he promises to cast
Alexandra Daddario, yes.
In his Batman movie?
As literally any character?
Literally any character, so
Catwoman,
long as she...
Poison Ivy...
appears basically in the same way she did in True Detective.
Speaking of Poison Ivy, Sonny, what is this thing about a Poison Ivy discussion?
They're at Poison Ivy Week. So last week we had Tombstone Week, which was a lot of fun. Michael Biehn showed up. He wrote some stuff for us. It was great. Stephen Lang sat down for an interview with me. I interviewed the great Stephen Lang about working on Tombstone. But this week we're changing it up a little bit. One of my coworkers, Preston Fassel, he got his hands on a copy of a four movie set, the new four movie set from Shout Factory, of the Poison Ivy films, the series that began with
Drew Barrymore, Alyssa Milano,
and then Jamie Presley, of course.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know. Hold on. You didn't get Vic Mattis to do this?
I didn't get the Blu-rays. Preston came to me.
You know what I'm writing for them? I'm doing the series on the Emmanuel series. Emmanuel in space.
Poison Ivy is much more on brand, Victorino.
Yeah, frankly.
No comment.
Okay. I would pay your site $1,000 of my own money to read Victorino reviewing the Poison Ivy.
You know what you have
I can make
series.
That happen. Don't say that because I can make it happen.
You know what's if you go back into the internets, do you remember JVL? We had a movie review of the girl
Kiss
next,
of the Vampire.
No, we Sorry, did a movie no. review of the Girl Next Door.
I think it's Embrace of the Vampire.
Embrace of the Vampire. It is.
Yes, yeah. Embrace of the Vampire is a good one. We did the Girl Next Door, and it was reviewed for us
by Michael Goldfarb.
And let me tell you something. It's a funny review. It's
very his everything first Michael, and only everything, movie review yeah, no, ever.
Everything yeah, Michael yeah. Goldfarb writes is funny. The great tragedy of Michael Goldfarb yeah, is that he has decided that he doesn't want to write. He doesn't want to have a paper trail of all of the terrible things that he you know says out there. So like,
well, this happens because they go where they can, you know, make more of an impact. It's sort of like Tony Kornheiser, right, Sonny? You wrote about this once. About the tragedy of people like Tony Kornheiser leaving journalism.
I wrote to go on to TV. I wrote about the tragedy of Tony Kornheiser. He did not appreciate that.
That's right. That was
a JVL assignment. JVL asked me to write about that. Do you remember that? JVL?
I do remember that. I remember what a dick he was to you too. You know, in an alternate universe, Goldfarb could have been like a political version of Labash.
Yeah.
You know, like just with the gonzo hangout stuff.
He has amazing instincts.
He does have amazing instincts, and he's personable, and he could just get to people and hang out with them. Mm-hmm. But he chose a different path.
Yeah.
And good for me, though.
He probably made the right call, let's be honest.
It's good.
He's not here jabbering on a podcast at 9:05.
No, he's doing more important
10:05 your time.
You know what else is important is continuing to support your restaurants and your community safely. There are thousands of restaurants open for delivery on DoorDash that need your patronage now more than ever. Support your favorite restaurants on DoorDash. You've counted on restaurants. Now they're counting on you. And while their dining rooms may be closed, they're still open for delivery with DoorDash. DoorDash is the app that brings you food you're craving right now, right to your door. Ordering is easy. Open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and your food will be safely left outside your door with the new contactless delivery drop-off setting. With over 300,000 partners in the U.S., Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia, you can support your local go-tos or choose from your favorite national restaurants like Chipotle, Wendy's, and the Cheesecake Factory. Many of your favorite local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just open the DoorDash app, select your favorite local restaurant, and your food will be left at your door. DoorDash deliveries are now contactless to keep communities we operate in safe. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more and zero delivery fees for their first month when you download the DoorDash app and enter code SUBBEACON. That's $5 off your first order and zero delivery fees for a month when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code SUBBEACON. Don't forget, that's code SUBBEACON for $5 off your first order with DoorDash. So we had some luck this week. In that there was some new content on television, and it was something that was supposed to be held, I think, until the summer. But instead, they decided because of the quarantine and such that they were just going to throw it up now, and that's on ESPN, although it's partly produced, I believe, by it's partnered with Netflix, and that is The Last Dance, which is the multi-part documentary. It's airing every Sunday
night. It's 10 parts.
It airs from 9 to 10 on every Sunday night on ESPN about Michael Jordan and that final season with the Bulls. That's 97 to 98. We all saw it. JVL, I have to say, the first thing I thought of was, I remember that last game. And I remember that famous final jump shot he made because I was in your apartment. We watched it together.
That's right. We were against the Utah Jazz when he broke the ankles of poor Byron.
Yeah.
What's the Jazz backup guard?
It's a long time ago. It's like...
Yeah, we were together. That was the first cover story I ever wrote for the Weekly Standard.
We were together. I don't remember much of that game because I blacked out shortly after that. I don't remember why. I just blacked out. JVL gave me something to drink. And then you woke up fine
the next morning.
On my stomach.
Oh, okay.
No, but I remember, I was going to ask you, was that the first cover story you wrote?
Yeah, it was. And it was one of these things where I couldn't believe that Crystal let me do it.
It was a great sign because I thought he was very encouraging and I thought it was great.
And
it was the first time in my life that Bill ever got excited about an idea I had pitched. Yeah, and you know, like it is really nifty. You feel like the sun is shining on you when the guy when who runs happens. Your magazine is excited about a story you've pitched to them, and it was a really good feeling. I'll actually never quite forget that.
Did you by any chance look back on the piece, or you remember it?
No, I remember
it. In context of now, like 20-something years later.
The last time I read it, I was so embarrassed by the writing that...
I know what you mean.
Which is good.
It's painful. No, it's painful. I don't like to read things I wrote 2 weeks ago, let alone... like, I went back and read some of the, like, pieces that I wrote for the website, for the Weekly Standard website, when I, first started writing about movies on a regular weekly basis. And I was just like, wow, this is either obvious or stupid. Sometimes both.
No, but there's a period in my life when I go back to it where I, like... Right, I appreciate the things I'm doing with a piece, and I can see it, and I almost always I can see how I would do it better now. But I like it. But that predates that period. I mean, it was really before I knew how to write, and so it is sort of.
Do you remember who edited the piece?
Claudia. Claudia edited almost every piece.
And I believe her first question is, "Who is Michael Jordan?"
That was a big part of it. She had no idea who this man was. God love Claudia.
That's funny. Yeah. Okay, so anyway.
Although the best ever was watching her ask Matt Labash what DVDA meant and watching Matt try to not answer her question because he had worked, he had gone to some porn conference.
It was a porn, yeah.
And I just sat there. I spent an hour literally just like Rear Window style looking through the window into Claudia's office, watching the interactions between she and Matt while she asked question after question, but what is this thing? What is that thing you're talking about? And watching Matt was like at beet red, like he'd been in the sun for 15 hours or something. I have never seen him embarrassed.
Defend writers, defend your piece.
No, but I mean embarrassed. Yeah, not even like he just, because he didn't want to say out loud.
It's like explaining it to your mom. Like,
yeah.
Claudia, who is the best editor I have ever had, I think probably any of us who have ever had.
She left me great advice before I came to the Beacon. She says, "Remember, we hire writers for their sensibilities, so you let the writer be the writer." That was one thing. She had a lot of other thoughts. In any event, what did you think about that first episode?
So I watched the first two episodes. I mean, I have a long relationship with the idea of Michael Jordan. And I have very complicated thoughts about him. And I kind of hated the first two episodes of the documentary. What did you guys think of
it? The first two episodes?
Yeah, the first two episodes aired last night. They did okay, back so
they,
to back.
Oh, they stretched it out. Okay, all right.
So JVL, you texted us something that this is not the real Michael Jordan.
No.
The real Michael Jordan is the guy at the Hall of Fame speech who is settling scores.
Yes.
And that is 100% how I felt when I was watching this. It felt very much like a massaged PR Michael Jordan to the and this is probably unfair. I'm probably bringing my own biases into this, but to the point where when he was talking about racism in his school growing up, I thought to myself, that does not sound like something Michael Jordan would say. It sounds like something Michael Jordan would say if he wanted to earn a measure of credit with ESPN and their crowd. It's not even that I didn't believe that he encountered racism in North Carolina in the 1970s. Like
Wilmington, North Carolina.
Yeah, I mean 100%. I absolutely believe he did. And I have no doubt that that shaped his view of the world. But it was just like, maybe this is just my own, biases coming into it. But it just doesn't sound like something that Michael Jordan would say when talking about his experiences growing up. You know, am I wrong? Well, did that jump out to you as well?
No, not so much as just the other sort of the smiling Michael Jordan and the... sort of talking a little bit nicer about the dearly departed Jerry Krause and downplaying that. You have to understand, so this is an authorized biography, essentially, right? So Jordan let them in, Jordan participated in the whole thing. There's a reason he does not have a great many close friends from the game of basketball, and he does not hang around the game of basketball that much anymore. It's because he was despised by his peers, because he a con man is what they all call him. This was a guy who never spent a second thinking about anything else except for how to cut everybody else's throat. And, I mean, it was just a total will to dominance. And that is why he was so good. I mean, there's nothing freakish about his athletic ability. He's a top-level elite athlete the way many NBA players are. But his focus, his drive, and his competitiveness are what made him what he was. And to the point where, you know, this is famously, he was always very aware on court of where the cameras were. And, you know, if he was not on camera, he would be talking trash and saying horrible things to, you know, the other guys he was playing with. And then the minute there's a camera nearby, he was like, you know, back to Gatorade Mike. just me doing some Space Jam over here. Look at me. And I don't know. I find that I mean, there are a lot of things that are fascinating about him. One of which is that you could see his... When you plot what makes him different versus every other basketball player I've ever seen, and maybe every other athlete, is his rate. If you were going to graph his increase in skills, it's a steeper curve than anybody else has ever had, right? So, and you, the documentary actually gets this part of it right, where so his senior year in high school, his high school coach calls up Dean Smith and says to him, I've got a kid who you guys should look at. Bring him here for your summer camp. He shows up at summer camp for a week, and at the beginning of the week, they think he's a pretty good player, and by the end of the week, they're convinced that he's the best high school player in America. And he gets to North Carolina, and James Worthy is there, and Worthy says, yeah, I was better than him for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of 2 weeks, Jordan's the best player on the team. You know, he gets drafted into the NBA. It takes him like another 2 weeks to assert his total dominance within the NBA. And you would see this even within playoff series.
Yeah, yeah. The best line in those first two episodes, a reporter asks him, like, how's the transition been to the pros? And he's like, that's been pretty easy so far.
Pretty easy. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and then it's interesting with the draft because he was the number three guy in the draft. And
Sam Bowie.
Yeah, ooh. Right. But it was because...
Everyone agrees that Hakeem should have gone first.
Sure.
Olajuwon.
And yeah. It worked out.
And, yeah. And it is because of whatever role, what role needs to be filled by that team. You're looking for a center. You're looking for this. You're looking for that. And that's why they got those people.
Always pick the best available player. Mm-hmm. This is the lesson for, at least for the NBA. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I used to know and care a lot about the NBA.
Yeah.
In NBA drafts, you never care about what you need. You
that's
draft
what
the best
and that's what they did
player.
Though, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Did you think it was fair or unfair the way, you know, his relationship with like Jerry Krause?
So Krause is a monster, at least as an executive. People seem to think he's a very
nice
guy.
He sadly did himself no favors because he looks the part. May he rest in peace, but he looked the part. You know, he didn't look likable, but, you know, they try to say nice things about him, you know, but, well.
I mean, maybe he was a great human being.
When they have the ceremony before the first game and they're there and they introduce everybody, you remember this in the documentary and they're at the United Center. And then, they won the whole thing and then they introduce Krause right before Phil Jackson. And when they introduce Krause, all you hear are boos, you know, from the fans, why the hell does he need to be introduced,
right? I mean, if you're Jerry, again, there's why do you need to come out on the floor before a game and get your ring? You're the GM, you know, you're a front office guy. Get up, go up in the box. I mean, you look at what he did, because the draft, once you have Michael Jordan on your team, my mother-in-law could have general managed any franchise with Michael Jordan to 6 championships. Mm-hmm. There's almost nothing that had to be done.
Disagree
more than any other player in NBA history. He is easy to mix pieces around. Very, very easy to mix pieces around.
I think the real master stroke was, I mean, look, I this is not a this is not like a bold contrarian stance that I'm taking, but I think the real masterstroke was bringing in Scottie Pippen. Scottie Pippen was the ultimate role player who could work around him and do
each other.
All of the things that Michael Jordan needed him to do, and was more or less content to play second fiddle right up until that last season when it, you know, there was money and there was
issues.
Injury and yeah. there was all sorts of stuff involved there. But like, I like working the phones to get Scottie Pippen is the thing that made them a double dynasty.
Well, but they used a 5 pick on it. You know, I mean, it is. I mean, they traded up.
They had to trade up to get him.
But it is not like they plucked.
They signed
him.
They signed him to like an 8-year, $19 million deal or something. You know, I mean, like they locked him down for a long time during the prime of Michael Jordan's career. The whole Michael Jordan thing does not happen without Scottie Pippen.
It does not happen without somebody basically like Scottie Pippen. I would argue there are a bunch of guys who could fill that role in a way that, like, Shaq needed somebody like Kobe, right? I mean, and Kobes are hard to find, right? A Scottie Pippen isn't that hard to find. I mean, there are guys like him, right? I mean, Marcus Camby could have been Scottie Pippen.
No. Marcus Camby couldn't have been Scottie Pippen. Yeah, if Marcus Camby could have been Scottie Pippen, he would have been Scottie Pippen. I mean,
wasn't put on a team with Jordan.
I am not. I am a Scottie Pippen diehard defender. I think he doesn't get the due he deserves, and I think this is why I actually really enjoyed the second episode of this series, because I do think that they got into the whole Scottie Pippen thing, which I think is I just don't think that Michael Jordan wins 6 titles without Scottie Pippen. Maybe he wins 3. Maybe he wins 2.
Sonny, when you were growing up, were you a fan? Were you an NBA fan? And if so, were you a Michael Jordan fan? Did you follow the Bulls?
No, I have.
And you
weird,
traveled a lot, obviously.
Yeah, I was in the military growing up and I wasn't a huge NBA fan exactly.
Manchester United. You follow Liverpool.
No, so I have kind of a weird agglomeration of fandoms that I have accumulated, again, from my dad, who, refused to let me buy tapes. The long story short is I really didn't watch the NBA until Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal were on the Lakers together, because I, had an inherited Lakers fandom. And so, I knew Michael Jordan was very good, just, discussions and whatever, but I just never really watched the NBA until the Lakers were good again. And then as soon as the Lakers stopped being good, I stopped watching the NBA again. That was,
Well, you know, I mean, it was rare
they're
for
good
me to watch.
I think they were good again this season with LeBron, but then, I don't know, coronavirus.
It was rare for me to watch NBA on TV, but I did enjoy watching over at the Verizon Center. Because of course we got tickets. Fred Barnes's tickets. And remember Barnes, he shared tickets with Robert Novak and Paul Jagot. So it was 6 in a row and their buddy Dave Smick. And then,
did you ever go with me to see Jordan when he was
I remember that because you know who else was there at the time? I think Oakley was there. Do you remember this?
Charles Oakley was also there,
and he would come out, and it was total. He was probably in his 40s,
95 years old.
Yeah, but I remember because this would have to be early 2000s then. When
Juwan was still there too, wasn't he? Wasn't Juwan Howard still there?
Yeah. And there was my favorite number 55, Jahidi White.
Jahidi was not there yet.
No, he wasn't. That was later. Playing. No, that was later. They didn't overlap. But I remember the excitement it's sad because this is not the United States. We're not watching a Bulls game. It was the Wizards. And so, you know, you had to take that into account. But it was
still exciting. He scored 50 points one of the nights we were there.
See, when he decides to get, he takes off, his sweat jacket thing. And then he comes out there and like, oh, he's getting it. He's getting ready to go in. And everybody gets so excited. And it was something. It was something to watch it because you knew that you were watching something that is
well, the guy had totally remade his game midway through his career. Mm-hmm. This is the other thing that's not understood or appreciated. You know, so he starts out as a guy who is a slashing attacker who could just sort of get around people in traffic and dunk the ball. And midway into his career, he masters this fadeaway turnaround jumper.
Yeah.
And so even when he is not fast enough to kill people off the dribble
anymore.
80 times a game, he's just able to sit 23 feet out, 26 feet out, and just murder them with a turnaround fadeaway. Yeah. That is not a thing that normal basketball players, even mm-hmm. like tremendously great levels of basketball players, yeah. can do. You can't just sort of like become the best at something in the league over the course of a couple of years because you decide you need to add that to your repertoire. Mm-hmm.
Well, this is why Kobe will always be the like distant shadow of MJ, because he did something very similar to this. He like worked on his 18 to 20 foot turnaround jump shot and got and was able to stay relevant for an extra 5 years as a result, but he just wasn't dominant in the same way that Jordan was.
Well, he didn't, I mean, he was not a sociopath and did not care to be dominant in this way Jordan was.
I think that is the thing that they most shared, was their ability to like drive people crazy and work harder than everyone else. I mean,
maybe that's true.
I just am excited to get to the Kwame Brown chapter of The Last Dance.
You know, because so I really,
Michael Jordan breaking Kwame Brown's spirit.
He was a top pick.
That's so I rooted against Jordan for the longest time. I mean, where do they beat the Phoenix Suns? That's the third title where they beat the Suns.
Yeah, is that 94-95?
And I am rooting 94. so hard for Phoenix at that point, because they have Barkley, they have Dan Marley, they have Kevin Johnson. It's an incredibly likable team. They're really balanced. They're fun to watch. And they are better top to bottom, 12 guys through the roster, than the Bulls are, because the Bulls are kind of a joke. Right, I mean, it's Judd Bushler and Stacey King and John Paxson and Bill Cartwright and a bunch of guys who would do well at most rec centers, but you know, like are basically the Island of Misfit Toys arranged around Michael Jordan
and Scottie Pippen, Steve Kerr.
But it killed me to watch them, and it wasn't only until late in life that I
Tony Kukoc.
Not till later.
Yeah. So
it's a. Did you guys? This is an interesting question for Sonny,
because
I think you would be sympathetic, Victorino, to
the guys in the hotel room. That part, yes. The answer was yes. I'd be in that hotel room.
The Jerry Reinsdorf versus Scottie Pippen.
Jerry
Reinsdorf. 100% team Jerry Reinsdorf.
Of course you are.
If you sign a contract, that's the contract. That's the contract. Would you like to explain the debate?
So Scottie Pippen is offered a contract by the Chicago Bulls to play for, I think it's whatever it is, however many years. 7 years, $7 million per or something
I think
like
it was,
that.
No. It was like
$3 million per.
It was like 8 years, $19 million or something
like that.
Yeah,
you mentioned that.
It was something insane.
And he's offered the contract, and Reinsdorf says to him, "I don't think you should take it." But Pippen takes it.
That's what he says in the interview now. I mean,
he comes from a family of 12 kids, one of whom is a quadriplegic, the father of whom is bedridden from having suffered a stroke. And he knows that he has to take care of this large number of people. And that if he hurts himself by playing for more money, he won't be able to do it. And this is the type of abuse of capital where it is awfully easy for Jerry Reinsdorf, Mr. Richie Rich, who got rich playing shell game companies in real estate because he basically figured out how to cheat is the wrong word, but take advantage of several tax loopholes. That was his thing. For the guy with the pile of money to say to the guy with the poor family who literally needs their son's income to live, "Well, I think that you should gamble and go for more money, but if you choose not to..." You know what? Fuck you.
No.
Fuck you, rich white guy.
I'm so excited to have Elizabeth Warren on the show.
This is such nonsense. He has an agent who should be telling him not to sign this, first of all. He should not have signed it. And second of all, that's the third of all, it's not even close to the worst deal that was signed within 5 years of that. You remember what Magic Johnson signed his contract for? You remember the 25-year extension that Magic Johnson signed his contract for? The 25-year, $25 million extension, $1 million a year for Magic Johnson. Like, there are people who get screwed in the NBA, and Scottie Pippen probably made a bad choice, but in the annals of bad choices, he made it on his own. He got the money. And he was still able to sign a pretty big contract after that.
Here's the problem with this. Looking at professional sports like this as a zero-sum game between ownership and the workers, not players, workers, is a short-sighted and foolish way to view it, right? I mean, this is the Patriots didn't get this way by Brady and Belichick and Kraft Brinksman and shipping one another. Like, you work together. You try to keep the essential pieces of the puzzle happy, right? And this way you can win more championships and make more money. How much more money would they have gotten had they won 8 championships instead of 6?
Yeah, well, you know what they
right,
would have
as
had,
a franchise.
You know what they would have had to do that was have Michael Jordan not go away for 2 seasons because he got busted for gambling.
Oh, you want to go there? Tell me, what is your conspiracy theory about this?
The reason? Honey? No, I actually don't believe that at all. I actually believe Michael Jordan when he says he got tired of playing basketball, and didn't want to do it for a couple of years, despite the fact that it's like the thing he was best at and all he cared about was being best at things. I totally believe that he just walked away for 2 years.
That's not the stretch of time that he played baseball. And,
yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's the answer.
So I totally believe he just walked away and wanted a new challenge, and that makes a lot of sense to me. I believe it in the bottom of my heart. But to win 8 championships had nothing to do with whether or not Scottie Pippen was relatively more happy for 2 of those seasons. It had to do with whether or not Michael Jordan was there.
Would it change everything?
They won. They won
Krause
six
out of there.
They won you six titles. Phil. They won 6 titles. With a guy who is the second best player on the team and probably one of the 5 best players in the league at that point, making $2 million a year. How do better than that? Do better than that.
They could have won another title, clearly, had they not decided they wanted to blow it all up.
Maybe they could have. I don't know.
You know what? You know what?
Would you take 6 titles in hand, or like... maybe you get to 8 titles if you do it differently.
If your marginal cost is throwing an extra $3 million a year at Scottie Pippen, I, as the guy who owns the franchise, would rather spend the extra $20 million on the keeping Pippen happy and keeping the bands together in an effort to make whatever the marginal increase in...
But Jordan was leaving after that season. It's not... Jordan
brought him back again. Oh. He was only leaving because everything else blew up. Because Krause wanted Phil gone. This is one of the this is a very interesting question. Is there another precedent in sports for a GM, not an owner, but a GM going to war against a championship franchise in an attempt to blow it all up early? Because almost always it goes the opposite, right? The management tries to hang on too late.
Stretch it on. Yeah, stretch it.
Because they try for that one more year where it doesn't work out, and you know they decide too late to blow it up.
You could I would assume there is a Steinbrenner argument to be made somewhere in here.
What do you mean?
Steinbrenner being unhappy with some iteration of the Yankees and blowing it up. I don't know.
But they're never good under him, were they?
Not
until he was like an old guy in the early aughts.
Well, I mean, they won. I mean, how many World Series did they win in the 90s and aughts?
It wasn't until the late 90s, right? When they got. Yeah. I mean, Stein had owned the team for like 25 years, right? I'm talking about somebody who was a Yankees person.
Yeah, somebody should chime in. I don't know.
I love the documentary. I thought it was great. Michael Jordan is awesome.
Sorry.
Victorino. When they showed the 82 final, I was so relieved that they didn't
show that they ended it with the Michael Jordan shot, and they didn't show with 12 seconds left.
Sleepy Floyd.
Oh, no, Fred Brown's errant pass to James Worthy. That, you know, because that's the one that really it lives in infamy. And I was, I text you. I said, I'm going to be sick. And I was triggered watching that.
Did you like seeing Patrick?
Oh, he's a, I love seeing Patrick.
He looked very svelte.
From that angle. They did it. They did. There was a lot of shadows that? There. Shadow play. Excuse me. No. I mean, there was a lot of angling going on.
I had the exact same thought when he showed up on. Did they put a lot of makeup to thin him there and like the shooting?
No, they did what they did to Robert Downey Jr. Or like they did to Robert De Niro in The Irishman. I think they did the same thing.
They de-aged him.
They de-aged Patrick. I'll tell you who looked good. Scottie Pippen looked good. He looked better now than he did back then. That's a weird thing.
Did you notice that there was like just a little tinge of gray right at the bottom of the hairline, which made it pretty obvious that he had dyed the rest of his hair and just hadn't quite gotten
that last little bit. That's okay. That's all right.
You know,
okay.
So of all the people who now look crazy old, who did you find most disconcerting?
Pat Riley.
Yes.
I was so confused.
He looked like Tom Cruise from Collateral.
Yes. You know why? Because he didn't look normal old. He looked like a lot of work plus the old. I know. You know what I'm saying? He didn't look like he's
on death. So Phil Jackson looks like he's on death's door.
No. Phil looks about like he's always looked.
Danny Ainge looked puffy. Very, very puffy Danny Ainge. But Bill Wellington.
Yeah.
Was that the guy with like the goatee with like the three white, the trident goatee?
Trident goatee. Yeah. Who now looks? I mean, he was never a great athlete, if we could be honest.
Did he have a slot machine behind him in the interview? Say. I'm pretty sure he did.
Yeah,
but he looked like an old man.
Yeah,
Paxton looked like an old man. All these guys, you remember seeing?
It's so depressing.
None of them age. Professional athletes don't tend to, at least in basketball.
Yeah,
they don't age like George Clooney ages.
Well, but they're weird. They're
the body type.
I mean, they're
is
they're
weird.
Just they're giants, such they're just, such weird giants. I mean, like I remember I saw a Wizards game from courtside, and it changed my entire perspective of basketball.
Oh yeah, of course.
Because I was watching these guys go like down the court in four steps. And yeah, I was like, this is freakish. This is bizarre.
With the exception of Earl Boykins.
These people are barely people. They're giant freaks of nature. And it's like, it's actually weird to watch them play that close in person.
And I'd
been to like a dozen NBA games before that, you know, but like in the 200s and in the 300s and you watch them play and it's kind of like watching them on TV. It's like, okay, well, but when you see them up close, it is disturbing.
Right.
It's actually disturbing.
When they're all together, you lose, the sense you know what I mean?
No perspective.
Because they're all together. And then when you're down on the floor, Sonny, it's like in Lord of the Rings, the Ents.
Yeah, totally.
Just giant
totally.
Trees playing against each other.
Totally.
Except that they're fast.
But they're enormously fast. It's the
speed of an NBA game, which you really can't appreciate until you have good seats there.
You can't appreciate on TV. You can't appreciate in the 300s. You have to like be there on the floor watching it happen. And it was actually I would say of every sporting event I've ever been to, it's the thing that most changed how I see the game and how it's played.
Yeah, I mean, you imagine yourself on the court with them. Can you imagine yourself on the court?
Yeah,
standing?
No, yeah. I mean, like you watch like an NFL game and you're like, I could never do that. I could never like get hit like that. Like this is, you know. But watching the NBA, you're like, oh, yeah, it's just guys playing ball.
Shooting
because
hoops.
they're all like 6'6" to 6'10". You know, more or less in that range. Yeah.
Right.
I dispute your take on Phil Jackson's age just a bit because I do think that he looks old, but he is old.
Yeah.
And he looks good. And also, here's an argument that I would like to throw out there. Phil Jackson is obviously the best basketball coach of all time, right? Like he's the best NBA coach of all time. And I say this while you think. I say this because the in the NBA, the only thing the coach really has to do is manage personalities, right? That is his main function is to manage
coaches can do other things. Yeah, I mean, he had Big Chief Triangle, Tex Winter there to help him. I think, as much as it kills me to say this, I think Larry Brown is probably the best coaching mind, at least of his generation.
And considering
from many places.
Yeah.
But
he had to work with him and Allen.
That guy was something else. So here are two questions. Who are your favorite, Pippen and Jordan aside, your favorite role players from those Bulls team? And then I would like your favorite NBA players of your youth, from your NBA days, when you actually cared about the NBA. Sonny, I assume it would be Kobe for you?
It would be, well, I mean, favorite is not exactly the right word with Kobe. He's the person I most watched with awe. My favorite was probably Rick Fox, who's just a ridiculous person. Rick Fox is a ridiculous person, but like he's absolutely
the French
Vanessa.
Wife?
No, he was married to Vanessa Williams.
That's what
I love. Yeah. I love Rick Fox.
Everybody wants to be Rick Fox.
He really is a fantastically ridiculous person. And the other option would be Robert Ory, who
Big Shot Bob.
I mean,
he was great. I liked him.
Big Shot Bob is an amazing guy. But of the role players throughout the Bulls years, were you a Kukoc guy?
I guess probably a Kerr guy. Steve Kerr. I like Steve Kerr. I didn't really watch a lot of NBA from like once Magic Johnson retired to until Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant were on the same team. Like I just didn't really watch, and that's basically the entire Michael Jordan era.
Yeah. Same thing. I'm not an NBA person, so I don't.
So you were not an NBA person, but you followed all the Hoyas in there.
Oh,
NBA
I sure. Jerome Williams, Junkyard Dog, Alon, obviously Zoe, obviously Iverson, and
did you overlap with Zoe?
Yeah, I was a freshman.
And Iverson?
Both, and Victor Page.
No,
I was not going to bring his name up.
So who is your favorite of all the Hoyas who went
all
to
those,
the Bigs?
Oh gosh, I mean, you know, it's so funny. I loved the team that went under JT3 to the Final Four. Jonathan Wallace, who was a role player, and he was fantastic, and he had a very clutch 3-pointer towards the end. It was neck and neck, and then they broke, and then went into overtime. That's how they got into overtime against North Carolina in the Elite Eight, going into the four. And I always remember Jonathan Wallace. He was there with Jeff Green and Roy Hibbert. I love Roy Hibbert. Roy Hibbert was great, but I will say of the three, I would say in the Bulls it would be like Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and ready for this, Joaquin Noah.
they never played.
I know.
Yeah. Many years.
He's the player who I hated the most. I think you know he was terrible. I hated. I loved his father. Hated Joaquin.
Yeah, Yannick was really great.
Yannick was great. Okay, so we got to move on. We're an hour seven. JVL, you look like you're about to pass out.
JVL, what was your?
Oh yeah, you. What about you? What about
you? Who's your?
I was an Iverson guy. I love the answer. He was the
best.
Did
you like? You can still see on YouTube, right, where he pulls that move on Jordan, right, where he fakes, right, he fakes Jordan, and then he makes, and everyone people love it. It was the first time. It was like the first time that he was playing for the Sixers.
You know, of all the guys, I loved Ron Harper, who was there for the second set. Kukoc was fun to watch. I don't know. I mean, I had a soft spot for guys like Judd Bushler and Stacey King, who were absolute zeros. So one of my favorite lines ever is one of the nights when Jordan dropped 69 and Stacey King got a free throw. And in the locker room, he says to the reporter, "Yeah, no, people are going to talk about this for years. Is the night that Mike and I combined to score 70.
That's good. That's good.
I like that. This is the truth is, of all the Bulls guys, it wasn't until the end when it was harder for Jordan to will them to victory that I finally got on the Jordan bandwagon. And it was only to watch the otherworldly feat. I wasn't even really rooting for him. I just wanted to watch him do it because it was something.
That's right.
And the double nickel, right?
I would be remiss not to mention Dikembe Mutombo, who I always wanted to be like off the court. I wanted to be like him off the court.
Go ahead, say it.
No, but there was, remember the controversy.
Give me the line.
Well, there's two variations. Do you remember the two variations?
I only remember one.
People are going to be chiming in and saying, "No, you're wrong about it." It's like he either said, "Who will be?" excuse me, who will be sexing Dikembe tonight? Okay, and the other one was, who will be giving Dikembe the sex tonight? And so it was one of those
two.
Oh,
no, I see. I thought it was latter. I thought it was sexing. Who wants to sex Dikembe?
Yeah, oh, see, there you go. It was one of those. It was an interesting conjugation.
Sex.
The best.
It's the same voice as Andre the Giant in Princess Bride, by the way. When he's on fire. Okay, we got to end the show.
One more note.
The 82 Please. Final with Georgetown versus North Carolina.
Yes.
Imagine three future top 50 Hall of Fame players on the court in a national final at the same time. Mm-hmm. That is something we have been deprived of ever since Kevin Garnett broke college basketball.
That's right.
And you know what? We're worse off for it.
Yeah. No,
and we're going
to sound
case.
Like old farts, but I agree with that 100%.
Man, it was exciting to be able to have college finals like that.
That minor league basketball must have been real fun to watch.
But it wasn't really minor league basketball, right? I mean, it was like high AAA.
Right, yeah, right.
And now,
and what is AAA exactly?
Like,
it's like
now
a,
it's like college.
AAA is a minor league.
Very close.
People are really getting an extra. It's like a bonus. This is like the double.
What else are we doing with our lives?
Really? Okay, so corrections and shout-outs. I'm going to say apologies to listeners. I totally forgot Master and Commander when we were ranking Russell Crowe. I love that
movie. And you heard about it from everyone who listened to the
episode. I
heard about
it from everyone. And I love...
You got about 100 tweets.
I did.
You know,
and it was strictly a brain fart because I loved Master and Commander.
That's a garbage movie. Peter Weir is fantastic.
That's the worst thing. That's one of your worst opinions, JBL.
It's because I like the books, and that movie.
Okay, so you're telling me they made a book from the movies, right? They novelized the movie.
I like books.
It's like
I read.
You know what?
Okay.
I'm not going to be reading tonight.
Okay. I think it's time for you to go to sleep. I also want to give it, this is, you know, since this is, you know, this is a crisis time, so a little bit of a serious note here. I do want to give a shout out to my brother-in-law, Captain Bill Dwyer. I believe he's going in into the breach this week, nursing homes and such. So Godspeed. But you know what? I told him, I said, hey, I got to work too. I'm editing. Same thing. Same thing. You might have to go to a nursing home, but I'm catching. I caught an ellipses that was 3 point, but should have been four. And there's a difference because it was the end of a sentence and then a new sentence with a, you know, and they skip the middle. As if you only do three, it's like the same thing. It just continues on from the first sentence.
And you know what? If you didn't catch that, just think about what would have happened.
Disaster. Chaos. Okay, that's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Just type in Subbeacon at a podcast. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time. Okay, thoughts?
Gotta have something.
JVL, have you guys... I was going to ask you about your drink again. You know what you should do is you put equal ounces. You just, you know, an ounce of the cream and then an ounce of, well, I guess that takes care of it, and an ounce of vodka, put it on the rocks. I was going to say if it was Kahlua, then you could just take an ounce of Kahlua, an ounce of cream, and an ounce of vodka on the rocks, and you got yourself the Big Lebowski over there.
A Russian? A Caucasian?
A white Russian, yeah.
I'll have a Caucasian. Yeah. Yeah. We got to have something, right? What are we going to talk about next week? What are we going to do now that there are no movies and there will never be movies out in a movie theater ever again because the theaters are all going away?
The Trolls World Tour? I don't know.
I still want to do
it. We should fly to Georgia together. We should all get on airplanes and fly to Georgia so we can watch Trolls World Tour
in
a theater when they open on April
27th. We have listeners who live in Georgia who will be willing to host us, and we could all live together, and we could all stay in the same...
We're going to Eric Erickson's house. Hey, Eric, you're putting us up. That'll be great.
Well, he's probably got a big house, so that'll be fine.
So, serious question? Serious question.
Yes.
Not an XM question?
Do we do Poison Ivy?
No, I can't do it.
I still want to do an episode where we pick the three worst films you could find on Netflix. That I saw one the other day when I was
so a book club basically.
Book club,
where
we each go and bring to present. That's right. And I'll mention it offline.
Book reports.
Because I don't want to mention it now. We'll save it for the show.
All right. Sure, well, I guess that's fine. That's fine.